This is CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Dreaded Exchange with CRB Ely. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Siyabonga Beile live on the Threaded Exchange. I'm so excited to be back after a month of traveling in Europe. I'm so sorry, guys, that I haven't been able to deliver a new podcast, but I'm back like never before. And today's show is quite a big one because everybody knows that there's three people in this world that inspire me. That is Kanye West, number one. Number two is Alexandra Fato, aka known as Veals. And number three is Bernard Arnault. I feel like if I could conjoin those three men into one person, that's who I aspire to be. So today, I've actually got one of those three men here today, and his name is Veals, who is coming all the way, I think, from Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, according to Instagram, where he's been launching an incredible collaboration, but also has a lot of existing exhibitions that are currently on show. And he's here in South Africa to launch something really, really exciting. And part of this launch, he's also going to be doing a mural in Johannesburg. And I'm so excited to speak to him about his inspiration, about his life, you know, growing up in Lisbon, being inspired by the revolution, and talk about how his work disrupts what it means to be an artist and what it means to be a creator. A lot of artists always think that things need to be perfect for them to create. Everyone always wants a perfect canvas. What I really like about him is taking things that are not perfect and giving them a voice and giving them, you know, vision, essentially. But before we begin, every day we are faced with news and issues that we often sweep under the carpet. Ignorance might be bliss, but not for the Gareth Cliff Show. Every Tuesday, Gareth Cliff and team don't turn a blind eye to issues that affect all of us. Make sure you download the podcast on cliffcentral.com. Don't Turn a Blind Eye To is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. Turn your window or doorways into your room's best accessory with Taylor Blinds and Shutters. You'll be spoiled for choice between Taylor's aesthetic blinds and functional shutters, which bring a world of color, texture, patterns, and a taste to your space. Talking about taste to your space, Mr. Alexandra.
First of all, thank you for having me. It's an honor to meet you as well for all the work that you've been doing as well. So it's an honor to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did you ever imagine starting your work in Lisbon that you'd ever end up coming to Africa and South Africa of all places?
No, actually, no. It was just really, it was a journey that started with me doing graffiti when I was 13 years old, just doing my work. And yeah, it's been an incredible journey. I always did my best in each opportunity that came up. And yeah, I would not expect, but I'm grateful, you know, to be able to meet, you know, people like you and like, this project that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And see that, you know, there is a new generation of people, of creators, of people that are trying to drive change through giving opportunities to others as well and to vision to the new generation that is coming. And that's very special.
Yeah. When you heard you were going to be coming to South Africa, I mean, to launch this incredible collaboration, were you nervous to come to South Africa? Did you know about South Africa at all? I mean, when I speak to people, most of the time when they hear South Africa, they think Nelson Mandela. Besides Nelson Mandela, did you know anything about South Africa or what you might expect?
No, of course I knew a lot about South Africa and I, you know, historically and so on. There's a lot of things that I really were part of my inspiration as well as an artist growing up. In terms of music, in terms of intervention, in terms of activism as well, South Africa has been always very, very, very strong. And this was, without a doubt, something that I was always in touch with. It's not my first time in Africa as well, because we did a project in Dakar, in Senegal, where we worked on Anta Diop. We did a huge portrait of him, which was very inspirational in the university that has his name as well. And I'm really looking forward to know a bit more. I just arrived, so
yeah.
I'm sure that you're going to give me some advices on things to see.
Definitely.
And to meet and people that are inspiring as well.
When it comes to, I mean, I've been following your journey, I mean, since I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was about 10 years ago. And I remember I'd been watching a lot of stuff around Banksy, Shepherd Fairey with Obey. And I remember coming across a mini series about you and the work that you're doing in Lisbon, you know, and how you were inspired by the revolution. Take me back to that journey. You know, what was art always something you wanted to do? Was street art something that you were always interested in? How growing up in Lisbon, what made you see these buildings and think, oh, I can actually create art out of this?
Well, it was a long journey. I you know, when I was 13, I was growing up and, you know, trying to be a rebel and kid and trying to discover things that were, you know, making me feel alive and making me kind of exploring,
yeah.
and makes the whole sense of being here and what's the sense of, you know, being here. And I started to do art very young. I remember since I was very young, I was doing, you know, drawings and everything. But when I was 13, I got together with, you know, friends in school and so on, and we started to do sketches and then eventually went on walls and then on trains and so on. And then I remember I was 16, 17, I was really like trying to push forward what I was doing. And I started to look at walls in a different way. Walls were, for me, were not just walls. It was something that's, since I was very young, I was used to see a lot of things on them. And in Lisbon, you have a long history with that goes from tiles to public art to murals that were done in the revolution in 74 from a dictatorship that we had.
Yeah.
There were done a lot of murals where people took their, you know, their dreams, their hopes for the future. And there was a big movement of artists that took the streets to paint those dreams.
Yeah.
But I was born in the late 80s, so all those murals were still there, but they were kind of fading away from the sun. They were kind of destroying, and I remember to see them at a very young age. After that, we had a big boom with advertisements, so you would have these kind of, you know, murals with kind of passing a dream and a utopia, but confronting with advertisements where you had, you know, the new age of usage of public space.
Yeah.
And then these two ideologies confronted itself, and then billboards went on top of these murals, and then graffiti started to show up in the 90s.
Yeah.
That went on top. And then I was part of the second, third generation of graffiti writers from Lisbon, so I was doing that as well.
Yeah.
And then the council started to paint everything white, and then more graffiti, more billboards. So the walls for me started to be something that were kind of absorbing the differences and the changes that were going through the country.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was really like, I was doing like everyone else. I was adding to walls. And one day I just, you know, started to think, why am I adding? Why don't I go on a wall? And instead of adding like everyone else,
yeah,
I just go paint everything white. And then I extract and expose the layers of history that are behind.
Yeah.
And I make a sense out of them. So yeah, instead of painting with color, I would just, you know, break the wall.
So it's the reason why you call yourself an urban archaeologist.
Kind of, yes, in a way, yeah.
So I think this, what I like about what you're saying, and I think it's something that I think as South Africans and as Africans we need to learn from, because also, I mean, we've also have quite a deep history around, you know, Nelson Mandela with apartheid in South Africa. But I think a lot of our artists, we still feel, a lot of the times we're exposed to how Europe is doing things. We're consistently exposed to how America is doing things. And it's easy for artists to start obliging to those inspirations, where what I like about you and coming from Lisbon is that you looked at your past and your history. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is a history that is considered very painful, but then you started narrating that history or using that pain to build a beautiful art. And I think for us in South Africa, when we think of our history, we always like, apartheid, oh my God, we don't talk about that. But then we always have these conversations around racism and activism in South Africa, but we haven't really gotten to a point where we're able to use our painful history as a way of changing it for the next generation. So I think what I like about your work is that you take something, you mean the buildings, that I looked at some of the buildings you've done in Portugal, is that mm-hmm. these are not buildings in wealthy areas of Portugal. These are not in buildings that are perfect. These are buildings from the revolution, and some of these buildings are desecrated. And for you to see art in that, I think it's quite amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it was conscious in a way, but it was kind of a process, you know. So I didn't have like kind of an idea that I wanted to do that, and it was really a kind of a inner discovery that then I realized you know, it made sense, you know, as a reflection and to expose yeah. all those layers and to talk about those issues, you know, and yeah. And the fact that, and the powerfulness of an artist that works on a public space is also that, is that you can go on an area or on a building that nobody yeah. cares about, and you just with the small touches, you can turn something that everyone passes by doesn't care to something that people pass by, stop and watch, and you grab the attention of people on that moment.
Yeah.
And coming from graffiti, it's usually something that people kind of talk to each other. It's kind of a code within a community. But then I realized that when you work on a public space, you actually can reach a wider audience yeah. and you can make people reflect on things as well.
Yeah.
And I guess that's how, you know, I end up, you know, trying to confront history and the impact that has on us in a way as well for people to heal and to kind of you know talk about it in a, you know, not in a positive way, but really start a dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, and a reflection, and I think that was kind of the objective of the work.
Definitely. Now, one of the biggest things that I've noticed, I mean, being a young South African, having, you know, traveled to America, Europe. And I mean, you were born in 74, and so growing up as a
87.
So I mean, growing up, you were born in 74. So by the time you were a teenager, there was also the rise of the social media boom coming mm-hmm. along, and sort of the power of the even internet starting to grow quite at a fast rate. And one thing that I think stands out for me, and I want to learn from you about it, is that your work has no ego. You know, we live in a time of this huge celebrity phase where, you know, on Instagram, everybody wants to be, look at me, look what I'm wearing, look at this amazing life I'm living. So we're living in a space that is so self-absorbed. But what I've always admired about you, I mean, even your social media, it's literally just your work. Was that always something that you did deliberately, to never focus so much on you, but mostly on what you stand for as a brand and your work as an artist?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I truly think it's important that, at least in my view, as an artist, is the focus I prefer to be on, really on the work, on the message of the work. I see art more as something that can put the light and that can put people talking about a subject, an issue, yeah. attention, a person, you know, people that have been really... pushing for work in their communities, that have been, you know, or just an everyday hero that, you know, has his job and he does his function in his society, that is very important, but he's never have a space in the public space. So for me, it's not about all of that life. It's really about using art as a powerful tool to put the focus on things, and that's how I saw it.
Yeah.
Which comes with a lot of responsibility sometimes, but he also gave me an opportunity to meet very, you know, interesting people that are really fighting to change their context where they
yeah.
You know, are born from, and that also help others as well. Talking about, you know, all the stimulation and all the this kind of social media yeah. driven society we live in, it's been, we are all exposed to a lot of information constantly.
Yeah.
So really, and that brings a big challenge to artists as well, because for you to be relevant and for the public space that to be relevant as it was 50 years ago, because today with the technology, with the social media, a lot of people interact and through devices and
yeah.
the public space where people usually used to meet and to
yeah.
gather, talk about things and so on, which was a public space, kind of lost a little bit
yeah.
in this last year. So it's important that artists, not just artists, performers, musicians, people take, you know, the streets as a place for culture, because culture brings exchange, brings dialogue, brings a lot of interaction between us, that's
yeah.
and not through devices. So
yeah.
So I think, you know, it's obviously a special time we live in, but
yeah.
also I think there is as always, you know, society, we always tend to counterbalance it. And yeah. I think we have also a generation of artists that are trying, of creatives that are trying to you know, to create alternatives to, you know, this social media driven.
Social media, yeah. Now, also what I find interesting, I mean, because I've been following you for a long time, I mean, there was a period of time where I didn't know how you looked. Because early on in your career, you used to do a lot of interviews where you didn't want to show your face because you felt that takes away from the work. So what made you now to finally allow us to see your face?
First, I think I did graffiti for a long time and I had some problems. So that was one of the reasons I kind of could not reveal who I was at the beginning. But also, you know, it's more, if you can bring more attention to the work and to the work that I'm doing, you know, I accepted it in a way that's, that it can bring more attention. And but it's, I still kind of try to be on the back of the work, you know, so it's really more, you know, being upfront and being comfortable with about talking about the work. I think that comes as well with, you know.
Now, tell me, you know, a lot of people also think, when people think, especially in the art space, because of social media, everybody now sort of has this notion to create. Everyone wants to be a creator. And sometimes I feel that because of social media, everyone is always rushing to post an Instagram something and not necessarily focus on the process of creating. So I see it a lot because I work in fashion. And I see a lot in fashion where we try to rush the process because we want to Instagram so quickly. And we don't actually take the time to go through the process of founding our voice and growing what we do. So what are some of the challenges did you have, you know, when you started at the age of 13 and now you have this amazing team, you're traveling around the world, but it wasn't always that way.
At some point
you were a broke artist on the streets of Lisbon. So how has that journey been for you to grow and now have this incredible team that travels with you? And what are some of the challenges that you faced?
I mean, it was very challenging, and part of that challenge at the beginning, you know, being an artist, you know, coming from graffiti also puts a stigma on you, especially on the contemporary art world. You're always seen as kind of an outsider, someone that, you know, should only work on the streets, and that's, and it's, the whole idea of street art for me, sometimes I have a, kind of a bit of a fight with it because it really puts this kind of artists that are creatives that work on a public space on a corner. So, and I think that artists that work on a wall, they can actually, you know, they have their studio work, they can do different medias, they can work even, you know, with, sculptures in, you know, in marble if they want. So it's just, there's this kind of, corner where these kind of artists, new generation of artists that come from working on a public space or that come from tattoo, come from, you know, comics, that cannot really go to other fields. And I think that's an assumption that is very incorrect and very limiting for this young generation of artists. And I suffered with that since the beginning. But it was also my, you know, my school was graffiti, was, you know, getting together with friends, you know, not eating lunch, not to get money to get the cans. And, you know, like, so it was really a natural process. But then, trying to be, an artist that I can, you know, be sustainable by myself, and then having a team as well that is, you know, well taken care of, and that's, it's part of them. I worked with them before, even, you know, when I was doing graffiti. It was a tough journey.
Do you ever have the pressure? I mean, because I'm 24 now, and I'm also like growing my own business. And I mean, sometimes things get bad where the business doesn't make money, and sometimes it's always a question of, are we making a mistake? Should we go back to school? Should we find a job? Did you and your friends ever have those conversations? Because I mean, graffiti, being a street artist, you know, not a lot of people are willing to pay artists such as yourself, you know, and brands have finally been like, okay, we need to work with different types of artists. But I mean, at the time, you and your friends creating this art, did you ever see it as something that could make you money? And if you didn't see it as that, was there ever pressure from your parents, your family to say, Alexandra, this art thing, you want to study maybe, have a job while you do it? Was there ever that, like, pressure around your family and friends to to not continue, maybe to find something that makes you money.
I mean, I mean, for my parents, there was not really like the future that they were expecting from me.
Yeah.
but well, it's a perseverance, and then I continued, I fighted for it. I managed to eventually get on a course in London, where I moved to London to study, which were hard times because it was not that easy.
I heard you went to Central St. Martin's.
Yes, yes.
So what did you study there?
It was fine arts, and I didn't finish it. Just because things started to, you know, happen,
evolve,
and eventually I was still struggling at the time. I was doing some projects, and I was managing to pay the bills and to get on it. But then I got an invitation from, you know, Pictures on Walls and Banksy, which was it was doing a you know, a big project in
you said
in
that very
UK.
Likely. I got an invite from Banksy too. Tell me about that. I remember when that happened, because I mean, as I was saying, I've been following your journey, and I remember hearing about, you know, Banks is doing work and he has given you space as well to join him in creating your own mural. How did that happen? I mean, how do you, I mean, everybody who's an artist, whether it's fashion, any creative right now wants to work with a guy like Banksy or the Banksy Collective. So for you at the time, what did it mean for you, you know, to be in school, Central St. Martin's, which is hectic, for you to be there, and you're trying to push this passion? You might be a bit frustrated because you're making money just to pay the bills, and you get this opportunity to work with Banksy. How was that for you?
I mean, it was very special. I was not expecting that, but it was an event that he invited more than 40 artists to go over to do a tunnel in the Waterloo train station in London, which was filled in with artists from everywhere. At the time he had the notion that he had the power to bring attention not just to his work and to the message that he had on his work, but also
the platform
for the other artists. And I learned a lot from that, and we can talk about it after, but this was kind of the moment where I kind of, you know, my work that I was doing for, you know, 3-4 years breaking walls was getting a bit of attention. But at the moment that show opens, it was, you know, I started to have a wider audience. People started to, you know, email me. I started to have galleries approaching me, festivals approaching me to do projects elsewhere. So then I understood that, you know, I was very lucky as well to be invited by him, and I did my best at that project as well. And things started to happen from there. But I understood that. I understood that, you know, if you kind of have a platform, where people kind of drive attention, to you, towards your work and towards what you do, it's important that you also give back, you know, and you can make it kind of easier for the new generation of artists or musicians and so on. So after that, I started to create a team as well, which was people that were working with me, and we gathered together to have a studio. And then I started the gallery as well in Lisbon, where we work with young artists, local artists that are starting, but we also bring artists from abroad that are working in the gallery, but also in the city, because each artist always does a mural in the city, a show, and an edition, and they kind of, you know, feel the vibe of the city and interact with other artists that are local as well. So it's kind of a platform for young artists. Yeah. And then we created a festival as well to create opportunity for the young music scene, not just from Portugal, but from Portuguese-speaking countries. Yeah. And also countries from abroad.
So you're much broader than a street artist. Do you like the title street artist? Because I feel like also with your work, I feel like it's something that Kanye always says. He hates being called a musician because he feels that limits who he is and what he does. And I feel for you, I mean, it's not just about street art. It's about giving a voice to art, giving a voice to music, giving a voice to different levels of expression through art. So do you think that the title street artist suits you, or you feel there's a, what do you call yourself?
I don't know.
Because the world, we call you a street artist, but I mean, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
Your work is more than just, you know, a mural that you've created on the street.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in galleries, it's events, it's working with young upcoming artists, it's coming to South Africa. And you're an activist. You're very vocal about artists being appreciated and artists being allowed to have a voice. So do you feel when I call you a street artist, do you think that limits you, or you don't?
No. I do think that, you know, being, I think today with everything that we have, it's very, you know, as an artist, you can, you can create. I mean, the act of creation can be much broader than being a street artist or being a painter or being a sculptor or being you know, someone that's gathers together a few artists and yeah. they do a project, you know. So I think it's really I think the borders of definition of what we do are getting more faded and faded, and yes, I truly see the you know, the platform for arts, the platform for music, as an extension of my work, because in the end they're not breaking a wall with someone, but they are and giving visibility to this person, but it's actually giving visibility to creatives and musicians. So in the end, I see it really as art creation, but it's not really art creation.
Yeah.
So it's very complicated for me to find the word and to define what I try to do. But yeah, I mean, I think sometimes tag names put us in a corner.
Yeah.
That we, you know, we should be freer than what people call us.
And now, going back to your team, I mean, you've grown from, I mean, I feel like Veals is no longer just you. I feel like Veals is a brand, you know, and I feel your team represents that brand. Now, as an artist, right, going from working and creating these works of art alone and now having a team and people join you on this venture, what is it like? Like, do you fight with your team sometimes when it comes to the creative direction? What is that process? When you disagree with your team, how do you solve those issues out?
It's I mean, luckily, it's been very organic. Of course, there is tension sometimes, there is problems. But the team has been the same for quite some time, almost, you know, 8 years, 10 years, some of the people, some are more recent, but it has been very cohesive team. And I'm very lucky to, you know, to be able to work with people that have worked close to me as well. But on the creative side, on the ideas, there's discussion, of course, but there's a lot of things that follow on me and that's, you know, part of it as well. But yeah, it's healthy. The thing is, at one point you realize that unless you have a team that's, you know, you can share, the vision, and you can really, think, the reach that your work can have if you have, you know, five people that are working with you, you can do in 1 week five times what you would do in one alone, yeah. You know. So the reach of the work and the reach that the message of the work can have, it's much wider. Plus, you get conditions of work as well, which are for me very important. That we, you know, we are safe. We have the right conditions on sites, the good cranes, the good materials. People are protected as well in their, you know, welfare and so on. So it's kind of, it's a give and take. But I think it's very important that also that's for me to manage to have a team, you know, makes the message of the work go, much further. And I think, that's why I kind of naturally went through there, but it was not thought as, you know, I'm building a brand and I'm building a kind of a company that is doing these projects. It was kind of very organic, the process.
So would you say, I mean, I think one of the things that I'd like to know, I mean, also I'm a young creator as well, and I've worked with different people over the last couple of years. I now have, like, he's part of my team, and I only met him last year. Now, when dealing with people, especially when it comes to choosing members of your team, what is the thinking behind? So when you chose him, for example, to be a part of your team, what was the criteria? Were you like, I like this guy, let me work with him? Or was it like, do you believe in the same thing? So how do you choose your team?
Was
it, or is it just the feeling that you get? Like, I know, because as a creator, I've had issues where sometimes I've chosen my friends to be part of my team because, like, I trust them, and I'm like, this is my friend, we've been friends for 10 years, and then they've worked with me, and then it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you meet someone within a year, and then you click, and he's one of the best people I've worked with.
Yeah.
So do you think, so for you, is the history, like, do people have to be your friends before they work with you, or is it a shared vision? Like, what makes you say, I want to work with this guy?
I guess there's not a rule. There's not a rule. It's really naturally, like Andrea, I met him because he was working with someone that we were working quite often, like because it was an outsourcing, we were doing kind of sculptures and so on, and he was one of the persons that was behind it, and he showed a lot of interest in the work. Remember that?
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
And then we met, and then I realized that, you know, he wanted to, you know, to get involved, and from that strength, you know, we invited him to come. It went well, and things went well.
Yeah.
But like for example, Paolo, that he's not here. He's outside. I met him in the graffiti days in 2008 or 2007.
Oh, wow.
And then eventually invited him to work with me in 2010, and then things went very well, and so on. And Eduardo is one of the recent members of the team, which got in 6 months ago,
yeah.
Which was an open call, and he was doing a job that's, I think he was happy, but he wanted a new challenge.
Are you happy,
challenge.
Eduardo?
Happier, definitely.
Yeah. So how long has Eduardo worked with you?
Six months. So, but he went for project manager, so he's kind of the one that takes care of logistics, you know, all the, you know, management of the of these
yeah.
travels that we have, and also projects. He kind of, you know, deals yeah. with the projects and so on.
Amazing. So now I want to know, I mean, how long have you worked with him?
About 4 years. Maybe.
4 years?
Maybe a bit
five,
more.
Five years.
And the other guy has worked with you for almost 10 years.
Ten years.
Now, I want to understand, now, as an artist, of course, over the last couple of years, you've just been evolving, right?
Mm.
And sometimes as artists, when we evolve and when we get bigger, I feel like sometimes the process of creating somehow becomes not as appreciated as when you were alone on the street.
Yep.
So I just want to know from you, and also now there's brands now that you work with, where before you were
mm-hmm.
not working with brands. So I want to understand from you, number one, how do you choose a brand to work with you? So for example, I'm going to call it the H brand. Can I say that? The H brand that you're working with that has brought you to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
When they first contacted you for this collaboration, what made you say, okay, I'm going to do it? And in the past, I mean, you've worked with Shepe Perry, with Obey, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a lot of projects with different brands. And as an artist, what is, I can't find the word, but how do you collaborate with a brand that you make sure that they respect your work and the story you're trying to tell?
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, meet their needs. So, for example, the H brand showed an interest in telling your story.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, they want to tell their story through your story.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you guys make that work? Because I feel like a lot of artists sometimes get into very bad collaborations
yeah.
where it's either their story goes missing or it's more overwhelmed by the story of the brand. Or sometimes, like as an art consumer, sometimes I can tell when an artist is being paid. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
this guy's been paid. It's not authentic. It's not real. So how do you make sure that your work is always authentic, always original, whether you're working with a brand or not with a brand?
Yeah. I mean, first, I worked with Shepard and with other artists in collaboration. So I've been working in collaboration, but with artists. It was not, you know, really brands. At this case, the Age brand kind of have a program with artists that they've been working for a long time. So they work with Koz, Shepard Fairey, Os Gemios,
yeah.
a lot of the iconic artists that are, you know, some of them are good friends, and some, you know, I know they work for a long time and I respect their work. And they've been building this kind of artist series that is very strong, and at the same time contributed a lot to the community and the movements. And that's helped these artists as well, you know, establish their careers and have their studios. And I think that's, you know, very valuable. That's brands can support these movements as in the grassroots. On the other end, there is the fact that you have your work, your mission, your ideals. And when they approached me, they were kind of very open to it. That they wanted, you know, a design that was part, and I was doing a few artworks that were inspired in the whole the heritage of the brand, where it came from, and all this part, and I did that part of the project, and then as an extension, the launch of this collaboration, I proposed them to actually do a project where we would do a mural on each city, where we would get involved with people that were really very relevant locally, that were working with their communities, that were pushing the boundaries, that were they were never stopping. They were pushing. They were never stop, never settle. The whole process of getting this motto, which actually combined and relinked in a way what I was trying to do, which was giving visibility, and as well the brand that wanted to kind of kind of things linked up, and that's why I can I accepted this project as well. When it's something that I don't often do, it's collaborations, but actually in the end the projects end up doing and giving to the community back, you know, and I think to have that opportunity and the respect that they had for my work, it was the thing that made me accept these projects. And it's been very interesting. I mean, the project we did in New York with TJ, which was, he's a person that is one, he's the son of one of the Run DMC that has been running the foundation and has been creating opportunities for young people to, you know, to have access to music, to, especially to the hip hop scene there. And then with Joe Fresh Goods, which has been creating a workshop in Chicago for young people to try to screen print, to try new things and so on. And he created his own label. He's kind of a reference or community leader that has been pushing a lot of, you know, kids doing, putting themselves into fashion as well. The person that we're going to work in South Africa as well is kind of influential in a very different spectrum, but it's about getting the things together in a way and make sure that, you know, the brand contributes to also, to the scene where I came from, and that I can contribute to the brand as well as a way to tell a story. And I think it's really the symbiosis that's, and the connection, when it's built, that's, you know, makes sense.
But yeah. Now, since you
but it's not every brand that actually lets you.
Yeah. Have you ever had brand collabs that have failed? Where you when you look back now, I'm not saying mention the names, of course. But are there any collaborations where, as a team, you're like, maybe we shouldn't have done that? Maybe that didn't work as well as we thought it would.
No, because we did very few. We did really very few. This was probably one of the first ones that we did. Was that very close.
Was that always, I mean, the intention to work only with a few brands? Because also sometimes I feel a lot of artists work with too many brands, and sometimes the voice of their work goes missing. So for you, was it always about, you know, let's work with, you know, close-knit brands and keep it quality and keep it simple, but also keep it not have your, you know, Veal's work live amongst 20 different brands at once? Was that always a business thing that you guys decided?
No, I mean, to be honest, it was quite a way of necessity, because and first the connection with the brand, of course, that is there. There is this ideal and this way of connecting with the brand that is meaningful and that has been, you know, very strong and consistent in supporting, you know, artists or even their, what's around them and what they represent is very powerful. That makes sense for me to be associated with. But also it's a way for me to support projects when I do walls and I don't get paid. That's the way also I can support, you know, the team, the studio, and to pay for those projects where I want to be independent as well. So it's really
balancing.
Of course, I don't want, you know, to do, you know, every day a collaboration, and this collaboration is actually very special for me, and very special for the brand as well. And in that sense, it's unique, and I'm not sure if I'm gonna do another collaboration in the future. But for now, I'm very happy with this one.
I'm gonna do a collab with you in the future.
Okay, that sounds good.
That has to happen, please. Yeah. Team, your witnesses.
That's good.
if you have to, you're gonna collab with me in future. But now, I mean, you. Because I follow you on social media, you're always traveling, you're always launching new exhibitions, you're consistently launching new work. When do you have the time to, number one, relax? Do you ever have time to just chill? Do you ever go out to music festivals? Like, how do you take time? Do you ever take time off? Or you're always creating?
Well, I do take time off. I would like to take more, but I try to take time off.
What do you do on your time off? Like, do you like to party? What do you do on your time off?
I read. I watch a lot of movies, series, and sometimes go to festivals. Sometimes I like to party as well. Sometimes, you know, I just like to chill and not think about anything. So it really depends. But it has been very intense, to be honest, in the last 2-3 years. And I think, you know, I was driven by this will to explore. I was always pushing new techniques, new ideas, this kind of, I don't know, inner necessity to grab the moment of now, of the world where it is right now, which I think is very, you know, very, very, very special, but at the same time, sometimes very scary as well. So it's kind of a moment that is very special for humanity in general. So I'm just trying to really grab the moment and capturing not just the people that I'm working in different places, but the moment and capturing what we are living now, because I think in 20 years we'll look back and I think things will be very different. So I think the moment that we live now, to capture it as it is right now, it's kind of a blast for me. So that's what I'm trying to do.
And also, I think what I also admire about your work, I find that a lot of us are always looking at our phones.
Mm-hmm.
In either conversation, he's looking at his phone. He's not in the moment. But I always feel like as a humanity right now, and I think that's why I find your work so important, not just on an artistic level, but on a human expression level. Where I feel, I love the internet. I think the internet is brilliant. We have access to so much information. I mean, being in South Africa, I didn't leave the country until 5 years ago, where I traveled for the first time. And so for me, the internet was a space to learn about artists in Portugal, to learn about what's happening in New York. But I also feel to a certain extent, social media and the internet has distracted us from seeing the beauty around us. Mm. You know, because I feel like if you're in an Uber, you're not looking outside, you're looking at your phone or calling a friend or listening to music. When you're in an aeroplane, you're not thinking, let me greet the person sitting next to me, let me be on my phone. So I find that the world has become pretty much a cold place. You know, we are consistently in these little silos where we're on our phones, talking, you know, doing all these different things. But what I like about your work is that for someone to actually see your work, they need to appreciate the moment, to actually look at the building and actually analyze the work. So for you, how important is it to be in the moment or what do you do also to not be distracted by the internet?
I mean, actually, I feel sometimes myself trapped into that kind of moments, you know. But I truly think that with internet gave us a lot of options. For me, it was super important for me to push my work, you know, for us to connect, you know, even without knowing each other, with and being so far away and to be in touch. It's something very special that never happened to humanity ever before, you know. So, and this really revolutionized the movement where I came from, because this street art movement, you know, each art movement has a city of birth. Yeah. The impressionists came from one city. Each movement of art has a city that was the birth of movement.
Yeah.
But street art, there is no city. It was really, people started to do stuff. And then at the same time that in London or in Johannesburg or in New York, you had things starting to pop up, and the internet was kind of the platform where people were kind of
where all of
dialogue.
Us from around the world we can look at this one platform
which really revolutionized this the internet, revolutionized how art is perceived, how it's received, how people see it. But at the same way, this was a movement that was very interesting, and I think everyone was very excited about that. But I think now we're starting to see the shadow of this kind of, you know, overexposure to
internet information.
And I think you're gonna start to have a counter movement where people will really start, instead of, you know, looking at the influences that they are getting from a worldwide world that is connected, hyper connected, and in touch, they will start to, you know, maybe not look to this, but look their own past, their own history, their own references that are local. Because otherwise, there is no way in a global world for you to differentiate yourself if you're not looking at your local heritage, your local history, your local reference.
Your story,
yes, and I think, you know, I think the humanity is still finding a way to deal with globalization. I think there's going to be this countercurrents happening.
Now, talking about like globalization and the power of the internet, as you said, I mean, there's also, because also you are in Lisbon growing up there, you also look to the internet for inspiration or look at the works of other artists. Who are some of the artists that have inspired you in your journey?
I mean, obviously Banksy was a big influence for me at the beginning, but all the graffiti writers from the beginning, from the 80s, 70s in New York, were a big influence as well. And then after, this was kind of my influences at the beginning, but after, you know, growing up, doing arts and so on, I started to research also on artists that were creating, you know, sculptures and more contemporary arts. And there's this artist, Gordon Mata-Clark, that's has been doing, you know, an amazing work in the 70s with, where he was taking stuff from the street and putting it in a museum context, gallery context. So many artists have been influencing me. And actually, there's Lee Gordon, which is an artist from South Africa as well, that's been working
here.
That I've been knowing him for a while as well. And Fate 47 as well. She's been working here. So there's so many references because, you know, internet gave us access
to everything.
But I think, it was important, but also it was important for me as well to sometimes to, you know, get away from all those influences and find my own path.
And do you ever, in finding your own path, because I've been following your work and how it's developed over the last couple of years, have you always been someone who wants to push themselves creatively? And how do you push yourself creatively? You know, because I think every artist in their journey has these moments of frustration when they can know they can do better, but then there's no inspiration. Have you ever felt uninspired? And how do you get that inspiration back? And how does that help push your creativity to the next level? Tough questions.
No, it's not. Yes. No, it's been a very interesting interview, for sure. It was one of the most interesting interviews I ever had until today. So,
thank you.
I always kind of, I don't know why, but I always feel a will to push things since I'm young, the limits of things, and to, really to push the boundaries of the work that I can create, how I can create it, the mediums I can use. I was never stopped by the limitations that materials can give me.
Yeah.
But also I discovered that a lot of what we don't give value as humans, if we put it in a different way, or if we subvert it, it can actually turn into gold.
Exactly. The buildings, like the buildings that no one cared about to look at, you are able to take those textures and layers and create a face that no one had recognized.
And the act of kind of, because in the end, I was always criticized, being a graffiti writer, you always, is a vandal. It takes value of things. It's destroying the public space. It's destroying public property. You always get this kind of, derogative kind of, affirmations through your work. And in a way, what I was trying to do was to go even more extreme as a vandal to actually destroy a wall. But at the same time, I was creating something beautiful. So it really depends of what you do with the energy that you have. Yeah. And with what you work with, because if it has value, it's just other people are not seeing. But if you see value on things where anyone is not seeing, it's where I think art happens, because you change the perception of people of something. And I think that's important, and how I feel. I keep pushing myself because I'm always trying to use, you know, I use acids to create, I use styrofoam to create, I use concrete. That's sometimes they're not perceived as something positive or, you know, explosive. So I use a lot of different materials to create something and to subvert how people perceive them. You know, even a jackhammer that's nobody sees as an art tool, you know. So it's really this idea of, you know, looking at things in a different way.
Yeah. How do you, as an artist, I'm learning a lot, by the way, from you as a creator myself. One of the biggest things that I have a problem with as an artist is that I'm very sensitive, right? And with social media era and with the media, criticism is no longer as authentic as it used to be, because sometimes criticism now can become hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle criticism? Like if someone bad mouths your work, I mean, I know that especially with street artists, especially street artists like Banky, if you look at Kors, for example, a lot of you guys have become pop culture icons. You know, Kors has just done a crazy collab with Dior, with Kim Jones. You know, Shepherd Fairey has done incredible collaborations as well in pop culture scene, and most of them have been criticized to sell out or the art is no longer authentic. So as a street artist now, like yourself, who's becoming a pop culture icon, how do you handle criticism? Do you just, do you block it out? Do you read comments that are bad or not? Because I can't, I still struggle to read bad comments about my work.
Yeah. I mean, I used to pay attention to it. I still do. And of course, it touches you. And, you know, you're trying to do something that kind of resonates with people. And when people get, it's frustrating sometimes. But when, it's constructive criticism,
yeah.
It's, I mean, I grew with that. You know, I think I learned from that.
Yeah.
But when it's simply hate speech, you know, I really don't care. And, and I'm lucky enough to not have like a crazy amount of that speech, but it's I mean, it's something that I learn how
but
to
how
cope
do
with.
You, but how do you make sure? Because I mean, as an artist, because you put your heart and your mm-hmm. soul into the work that you create, and you have this big team that also works day and night to make sure this art comes out as, I wouldn't say perfect, because I feel perfect doesn't exist, but to come out as authentic as possible,
mm-hmm.
and then someone just criticizes it. How? Because I struggle with the whole thing that sometimes it gets into my head mm-hmm. a little bit, because I'm like,
why?
I put everything into this. I put money, efforts, a team, put their heart in, and we're proud of this work. So how do you make sure that criticism doesn't affect you mentally or how you create? Because I feel that sometimes as artists, especially upcoming artists, where there's this over sensation of social media, they get criticized and sometimes they just want to quit and give up and leave and not create anymore. So how does the criticism not affect you mentally and you're still able to just push through and create?
I mean, it's a difficult question.
Is it maybe the team also is just like, let's just leave it? Like, how do you deal with it? Do you talk about it if you have bad criticism?
Yeah, I mean, I do.
Yes.
I mean, I had several things that, you know, were criticized, and I take it as normal, but I try to be as away as I can from when it's really like hate speech, which for me it's it makes no sense. When it's something constructive, it really, I can learn from it. That's okay. But I think it's basically really be true to your ideals, be honest with yourself. Even if you have to do projects that sometimes you're not completely comfortable with them, do them for a reason. And if the final reason is looking at projects that your art were managing to create, like the platform for artists, the platform for musicians, the people that you try to, that you kind of gave back, that's so much more important than a few people going on Twitter and saying something, you know, stupid without thinking, you know. So it's kind of, it's just, you know, putting the focus on all the positive things, because the first impression we have when we receive something like that is, why, you know, this
person. The reason I asked that question, I mean, I feel like your work is very unfiltered. And what I mean by unfiltered is that your work is very honest. And your art is very honest. And sometimes, as human beings, when we see art that is honest, sometimes we can't take the truth when it's staring at us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's hard for us to see that truth. And I mean, looking at globally what's happening, I mean, also, like, I don't like mentioning this guy's name, but Donald Trump talking about, like, immigrants and all these things.
Mm.
And your work revolves around painting different types, not painting, but creating all these murals of different types of people from different cultures in different cities
mm-hmm.
with no rules. And I remember reading an article that criticized that a little bit. So for you, sometimes, even though your art is brilliant and you're telling the truth, sometimes humans can't take the truth. And that can be hard to deal with.
Yeah, for sure. But but I think, you know, if an artist doesn't create a bad reaction, you're probably not doing it right.
Yeah.
Because, so it's you know, if you're pushing the limits, if you kind of create something that makes people think and reflect on, it's natural that you're going to get that reaction. And it's just, personally, yes, it's difficult to take it sometimes, but it's part of the job, I guess.
Cool. Instead of, now we're coming towards the end of the interview, let's get more into the fun. I feel like, thank you for such a great interview.
It was amazing.
I asked you so many questions.
No problem.
But let's talk about fun stuff. What's been the most exciting part about your journey? Like, what's been, when, like, give me a moment in your career where you're like, wow, I did this. Have you had many of those moments of excitement with your team?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah. Like, your art is on a fucking bottle. Like, for example, like, I showed him, I showed him a video that was done by you and the H brand and showcasing, like, the bottle. I was like, ah, that is so exciting. Like, is that exciting for you still? Like, where you see the bottle and your name and the brand and your art and your art? Does that excite you?
Yeah, I mean, it does. It's part of a wider project, for sure, and it does. But I think one moment that was very special was the first moment we did the festival, the Festival Eminente that we did in Lisbon, where we were managing together all the hip-hop scene where I came from as well, from Lisbon, which you know, is people from Cape Verde, from Angola, that came to Lisbon and struggle, you know, and came from the same place where I came, and we got it together, from musicians to b-boys to graffiti writers to artists to performers, and we managed to do a festival with, you know, very grassroots and strong people from the underground scene from Lisbon, and that were bringing people also from abroad. This was a very special moment, because I think one thing that I learned from all this process and growing up in a, you know, in the hip hop community in Lisbon as well, is that, you know, it's not just, you know, you're doing well, but it's not about that in terms of your work and your
It's about serving people.
Yeah, and serving and bringing everyone that you can. Because hip hop is about that. It's not just you having a party. It's having a party with every of all your friends together, and managing for them to be valued by what they are good at. Yeah. And I think that's what I learned also from growing up doing graffiti and being part of the hip hop community there.
Amazing. And now you're in South Africa.
Yeah.
Now tell me, what's happening this week? So I know the guys from the H brand. The name that shall not be mentioned. So what are you doing this week? So I know there's a lot of work for you to be done with the H brand. I know you're starting a mural tomorrow. I know there's an event on Thursday. So tell me, what are some of the things that you're up to this week? And on your personal, because I always feel like when you travel for work, as much as it's all about work, I feel there should be a little bit of play. And I feel that you and your team should explore. Please make sure you show them around.
Yeah.
I feel like
you need to help us. You need to be with us.
I'm gonna contact you, and if he hasn't showed you like the wildest things that happened in Joburg, then I'm gonna be very sad. But okay, cool. So
and you come as well.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there. I'm free the whole week. I'll do it. So tell me, what are some of the things that you're up to this week, and what is the big inspiration behind this secret mural that you're doing?
Yeah. I would let people go and discover it by itself, but it's a very special person. After a long discussion and research, that would make sense for us to do. But I think, you know, come to the wall. The wall is at it's close to the Cosmopolitan Art Gallery, and it should be done by Wednesday. And we're gonna start work on Tuesday as well on the wall.
So the guys are listening live on air. Let's play a guessing competition. Are you in for this? Let's actually play a guess for the next 2 days. Let's guess who is on that mural. I say it's Winnie Mandela.
Okay.
So guys, please guess. My WhatsApp number is 0797482090. And the person that gets it correct can maybe join me for the event?
Yeah.
Can we do that? Can we run a competition?
We can do that, but let me give you a clue. The person is still alive.
Okay, give us clues. So the person's still alive.
So, the person is still alive.
Are they South African?
Yes.
Definitely.
Oh, I have an idea. It has to do with your lunch. There we go. Am I on the right track? Okay, I'm not going to mention the person, but I think I do know. He had a very special lunch today with a very special South African powerhouse. So it makes sense they would have lunch before he begins the art race. Oh, I hope I'm right.
I think whoever gets right.
If I'm right, can you sign my bottle?
No, I will sign it anyway.
Okay, cool. So that's what's happening this week. You're starting the mural tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then the event is on Thursday. You're here until Saturday. So in between, you're going to be exploring and all that.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yep. Yeah. And hopefully you join us.
No, of course. Of course. One last question I want to ask. You landed in South Africa yesterday.
Mm.
What is the first thing you noticed about South Africa? Anything. Anything you noticed or anything that surprised you being here for about 24 hours? What is that one thing you notice where you're like, okay, shit, I'm in South Africa?
I think when the plane was landing, the color of the sand, it was strong.
Amazing, so, yeah. Amazing. And then in closing the interview, how can people connect with you? I mean, there's a lot of South Africans, a lot of upcoming artists who'll be listening to this, who will want to follow your work, follow what you're doing. So do you have a website? So where can they...
Yeah, I mean, it's vhils.com. That's the website. And then also I'm on Instagram. So vhils, it's where I'm on Instagram, Twitter as well, and Facebook. Even if you were criticizing all the social media, I'm on them.
If you criticize, we will block you. If you criticize any crap comments, we will block you. I block now. There's a new thing. I don't care, but like on social media, I just block.
Yeah.
So we're going to block you. If you criticize anything that Veals is doing, we're going to block you. Or we'll send cops after you. So there it is, guys. I'm here with, this is Alex. So this is, I dreamt of saying this today. I actually planned it. Portugal is not known for only the best soccer player in the world, but it's also known for the best artist in the world right now. Alexandra Veals, thank you so much. Thank you to you and your team for being here. I'm excited to spend some time with you guys and show you Joburg. And for me, I feel like wherever I've been around the world, I've been to New York, I've been to Portugal as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Spain. And there's one thing I'm inspired by all those cities that I've been to, but there's nothing like Africa, man. And especially South Africa. So for me, I'm just praying and hoping that you're going to see a lot of things you've never seen before. And I'm very excited to see how that will inspire your work. Definitely.
With pleasure.
So thank you very much. This is Siyabuyile on the Thread Exchange. And actually, speaking of other great podcasts, what if I told you we were going to live until 200 years old? As Sanlam turns 100, they are looking ahead of the future. The 200-year-old is a future-facing podcast based on leading science, featuring the voice of Nambi Tapumlwana and Tapelo Mokoena. It's the story of Lesedi Ndaba told in the year 2018. There we go. It's a podcast that pulls back the curtain to the world of the future. Visit the 200yearold.co.za to listen or find out more on cliffcentral.com. I'm very keen on the future, guys, so make sure you listen to that podcast. I'll be checking it out. And yeah, man, I'm also keen to hear Nambi Tantapel Mokoena, who are some of the best actors in this country. Thank you very much for joining me. This is another episode of the Thread Exchange, conversations that are brave, that are young, and talking about people that just disrupt the world, man. And thank you very much to Veals for coming onto the show. I think storytelling is very, very important, and learning from each other as artists is very important. I believe that the collective of the future is in collaboration, and it's about being one as a community globally. I don't care whether we're pink, purple, black, white or blue, African, Spanish, Portuguese. I feel that as a human race, we are all one community, and we should exchange ideas and grow the world and make it a better place. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Super inspiring. Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.